The following is a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. Good morning, gentlemen. Good to see you all.
Good morning, Scott. Morning, Mitch.
So morning, I guess news this week, inflation, I guess a little higher than what we thought, interest rates holding steady and such, but it seems like they're having a lot more fun south of the border. Their economy's taken off.
It's, you know, it's really two different economies. Totally. That line on the border is making a massive difference. It's actually incredible.
How can that be?
Well, one is based on capitalism, pure capitalism. Lower taxes, particularly having more money in the economy, letting the average person spend the money versus a lot more government here in Canada. And that really is probably hurting us more than anything. So it comes back. It all feels good at the time, but it does come back, and capitalism generally prevails. So look in the U.S. now, the economy is doing extremely well. The stock market's doing better. The interest rates are not going down any further, only because they've kind of got stuck at about 3%. So they've come down from 8 to 3, which is great. They've done a great job there. And Canada's done the same, except we have high interest rates relative to our economy. Our economy is just sputtering. It's above, it's got slight growth, but the only growth we're getting is due to immigration. That's the only reason we have any. If we didn't have the immigration, which is also causing a lot of other issues, then we'd have zero growth. So yeah, it's absolutely amazing how different the economies are. And so that lowering the interest rates is going to be difficult because the U.S. doesn't need to, and Canada probably does.
Well, even look at state by state down there. You look at the states that are really starting to flourish and their economies are growing so much. You're seeing the ones with the lower or no state tax, people moving from California, which is a pretty similar tax situation to Ontario a little bit. You're looking at Florida, South Carolina, all the ones down there, people are moving from those high tax environments over there because the taxes are much lower. And now those economies, the buildings, everything there are just flourishing.
Right? And no question, Mitch, when you're hitting tax rates here in Canada, 53.53% for the highest tax rate. When you go to the US and tell people those tax rates, they cannot believe the taxes we pay here in Canada relative to the U.S. Yes, we have other benefits, and they certainly have things that we don't want. But if you simply look at the economy, that is a big difference. So, yeah, it's forcing, you know, it's kind of interesting. Both leaders currently are not doing that great in the polls. And if anybody should be doing well, it should be Biden based on the economy. Yeah. And on the other hand, we have Trudeau at the other end having probably the least his lowest polls maybe in history for the Liberals right now. So it's a very interesting situation politically, and economies are very different. So at the end of the day, how does this affect you? Well, I love the fact that we can invest and make more money. And I'm going to be discussing tax savings, because if one thing we need to do very much more in Canada, everything possible to save tax. So I'll be going over withdrawal strategies. But I know, Mitch, it's springtime and you get the broom out, are you?
Yeah, I mean, clocks moved forward last weekend, and I'm still trying to get used to that 1 hour time change.
Yeah, really.
But I mean, it's tough to feel like it's just spring now because it's been so mild and beautiful all winter. Yeah. But just like seasons that we have in Canada throughout the whole year, you got winter and turning to spring, you've got other financial seasons as well. So you've got February up until the end of February. It's basically RSP season where everyone's getting their contributions done for the previous year's taxes. And now the next upcoming deadline would be to file your personal tax returns. But we're still early in the year, being mid-March. So if you've been putting off some stuff so far, I know those resolutions that we went through early in January, maybe you've put them off. It's still early in the year, and it's a good time to put those in place now and not, because the next thing you know, it's going to be June, and then it's going to be September, and you're going to be like, oh, wow, the whole year just kind of went away, and that checklist still necessarily isn't checked off. So here are some spring cleaning checklists to kind of go through here. And the first one here is reviewing your cash flow. So gathering your latest bank statement and credit card bills, it's really not glamorous. It's nothing anyone wants to take the time to do. But if you do take the time to do this, it can make a huge difference. You could cut time. You could cut some wasteful spending. Like maybe there's some memberships or subscriptions that you really don't use, or even getting a discount on your Bell or TV provider or cell provider. If you can get $50 or even $25 off a month, you're talking $600 to $300 a year that you can use for something else. And that's just a small example right there. And then there's other stuff that the discretionary spending, eating out or other things that you really, really aren't keeping track of. And maybe you should review how you did last year, this March, and take a look at what you would actually like to do going forward. So setting those goals as to what you think you're going to be doing up this year. So freeing up some cash flow from those unnecessary expenses would be something good to do. And I know this is something that we go through in all of our meetings with our clients is cash flow, because it's actually so vital and important to someone's financial well-being. And one cool feature that our software has, and it's pretty interesting. So we go through expense by expense. We put them in each of our plans. And if your income comes in higher than your expenses, they create an expense that it just assumes that you are spending it and not saving it. So it's going somewhere and it's going to detail how much this actually is. And this has really helped some clients realize a few things here. So they could either realize that they're spending more than they think, and they're going to go home and they have their homework to find out where is this money going? Where we got to figure this out. Why is there $10,000 a year, $20,000 a year that we don't know where it's going? Or the other side, they're accumulating funds in their bank account and they're not putting it to work. And that's a discussion that we get to have with our clients as to, well, why do you have this much money sitting in your bank account doing nothing? And that's really a wasted of opportunity, especially in such a high interest rate environment. You could be earning 4.75% in a money market fund with zero risk rather than sitting in your bank account earning absolutely nothing. So I really like this feature in our planning software. And I say this because cash flow is crucial to all stages of the financial planning process. If you're young, it's really finding the difference between your income and your expenses. And that difference there is the opportunity of how much you can put away into your investments. And from there, we decide which fund is going to make sense, which account is going to make sense best for you. Could be TFSA, could be FHSA, or maybe you're earning a high enough income that it justifies using the RRSP when you're young. When you're pre-retirement, it's still pretty similar, but it's a little bit more complex. So you may have different streams of income. You may have dividends or corporate accounts, and they may have their own cash flow in their own sense. And you need to have a plan put in place to have the most tax-advantaged way to put that cash flow to use as well for you. And then the last one there is when you're in retirement, you really need to zero in on your cash flow. What are your retirement goals? What are you trying to do? And what accounts have you accumulated so that we can decide, well, which buckets are we going to take this from to minimize the most tax? And as well, look 10, 20, 30 years down the road, minimize your tax to your estate as well. So cash flow has so many crucial factors to it, and it's certainly something that we review with all of our clients pretty much every single meeting. The next spring checklist is reassess your debt. So if you have debt, it's a good idea to review this constantly, especially if it's a high interest rate debt. So if it's a 15 to 20% credit card debt and you have something, the means to pay this down and you're not, you really need to take advantage of that. Even if it's a line of credit that you have maybe a prime rate because it's secured against your house and it's 7.2%, pay down that 20% credit card with the line of credit. You're immediately saving a large amount of money there just by doing that. Yes, you still have a debt, but that's could be a third of the amount of interest you're paying on this. And I mean, as amazing as it is to get great returns in the market and see your investments go up, it doesn't matter very much if you have that debt costing you more than your interest. I know right now we're in a tricky zone where interest rates are still high and they haven't been lowered quite yet. Even though there is a possibility to be lowered soon, you should still be paying off the higher debts than you are putting money into investments because it's pay off more. Your investments could do 5 to 7% annually on an average basis, maybe even better. But those debts may actually be costing you 7 to 20% guaranteed.
You know, it's interesting when it comes to money, whether you're losing, if you know, as you mentioned, Mitch, having money in the bank account earning zero. Well, if you could take, say, that money and put it into that money market fund earning 5% or 4.75, You know, let's say that makes $1,000 a year, $100 a month. If you actually had to write a check for that $1,200, it would hurt. You know, people would think twice about it. They would actually think, geez, do I really need that? But the fact you're not making it, it's like, oh, well, it's not the same. Even though it costs the same into their net worth, it's a totally different mindset. And the same goes with debt. You don't actually see anything. You just don't pay as much interest. And yet, if you had to write a check for that interest, which you actually do, but you don't actually probably break it down in your head, it would make people think twice about not, you know, that much interest they're paying. So yes, you're absolutely right. When it comes to, you know, getting your house in order, whether it's opportunity cost by not earning anything on your savings or paying down debt, they both really make a big difference.
Yeah. So debt, I mean, money in general is a very emotional thing. And I mean, everyone wants to be debt free. It frees up your cash flow, but there are forms of good debt as well and bad debt. So I had the interesting situation this week, actually, that someone has a mortgage coming due in 3 years. And right now their interest rate's 2.3%. And they were thinking about accelerating their payments for the next 3 years because they're afraid the interest rates are going to be much higher in 3 years and their mortgage is going to cost a lot more. But if they're going to, instead of accelerating that, they could put that acceleration payment into their TFSAs because I know they have a lot of room. And they're at the very least, they could be getting 0.75% just sitting in a money market fund, which is double what their interest on their mortgage is. So even if their interest rate does grow on that mortgage, they're going to be their investments would have grown more than the acceleration payments would have actually paid down. So if they do have to pay down that in 3 years, well, at least then you were earning 4.75 instead of paying down something only costing you 2.3. So that was a really eye-opening thing for him. People just don't like debt, but 2.3% was basically a gift. It was something that it just won't happen for a long time. Likely, you likely won't see that for a while. And the fact that people didn't really lock in back then is now in hindsight, obviously not a good decision. People wanted that 0.1 or 0.2 better for the variable rate, but he locked in for 5 years at 2.3%. And he could put in a money market for 4.75% right now instead of accelerating those payments. So these are things that we go through many times with clients, is just making sure that they're not paying off small debts, small interest rate debts, when their investments could perform much better. So that's one thing that you have to do there. And the third thing here is to consolidate your accounts. There's a total rude awakening if you have too many accounts going, especially around tax time. I know if you have to accumulate tax slips from every single institution, it can be really, really taxing. So make sure to consolidate.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. A quick break here. We're coming right back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're talking about financial spring cleaning.
Yeah, it's beautiful weather out there, and I just want to keep going on that. Consolidate your accounts. Tax season is coming right now, and no one likes tax season, especially even the accountants. Like, I feel like they just put in overtime this time of year. But it's a rude awakening if you don't have all of your stuff organized. It can really be a pain. So trying to locate those documents if you aren't consolidating your accounts can cause a lot of issues. It also makes managing and tracking your investments very difficult. Unless there's a specific reason to have scattered accounts, your investment should ideally be held at one investment firm. One obvious exception would be your employer's retirement plan and your checking account. So other than that, it makes it significantly easier, and it's going to make you a lot easier in taxes when you're just at one institution. So it's something I believe a lot more crucial than most think. So let's take a new account, for example. If you have a first home savings account, you're allowed to have $1,000 in room the first year you open it. And this is not per company. This is total between all companies you open it with. So if you have 2,000 at one, 6,000 at another, you're maxed out for the year. You can't go and put in another 3 or even 8 at a different one. That means you overcontributed and you're going to have to pay a 1% per month penalty, which also goes for the TFSA, which is a much larger account. You can only contribute 95,000 at this point. And those over contributions can really cost you a lot. So it's easier for your financial planner. It's easier for you to keep track, as well as the CRA, if you just have one institution, because every institution reports at different times as well. So the CRA, if you have 5 different TFSAs, they might get different companies reporting at different times, which means they're actually might not be correct. And we've actually had clients not have the TFSA room on the CRA correct, and they've had to double confirm with them basically to make sure that is correct, so they're not getting that 1% penalty. And the last one here for spring cleaning is just excess cash to work. Just make sure you're not leaving that money in your bank account. Right now, more than ever, you should be investing as much money as you possibly can instead of leaving it in your bank account because of this high interest rate environment. For example, if you sold a house and you have $500,000 sitting in your bank account, even if this is just for 1 month, and that money market fund can earn 4.75%, that's almost $2,000 for 1 month just sitting in your bank account that you missed out on because you just didn't immediately move it into your investments working for you. So it's so easy for you to just, okay, well, I mean, yeah, a couple months went by. It doesn't really matter. It's just sitting in my bank account. It's still there. That's $4,000 that you just missed out on just because it was sitting there. And more often than not, goals change during that time. And next thing you know, you're just going to invest it anyways. And so just make sure you're putting it to work, and especially in this easy, high interest rate environment where it's guaranteed and you're not missing out on that return.
No, that's a great point. And we talked about, again, the opportunity cost. People just don't get too upset about it. And for us, whether it's you're losing the $2,000 per month or you had to write a check for $2,000 a month, it's the same thing. But yet the mindset for, I'd say, 99% of the people, you know, if they don't write, it hurts them a lot more to actually write the check than not make the money. And the banks love this. They love you leaving $500,000 sitting in their savings account, earning virtually nothing, because they're loaning it out even at prime at 7.25%. So they're making 7% on that money. And so, you know, this is a great suggestion, Mitch. So anyhow, on to the next area, which, you know, taxes continue. And it's nice to look at the day by day, year by year kind of income tax planning. And as you talked about there, Mitch, but the other side is, what about retirement withdrawal strategies? And this is really where a financial planner is so important, more so than I suggest any other part. Yes, accumulation and everything is important, and people with financial planners will end up with 2 to 3 times more money than those that don't. No question, makes a difference. But one thing we do have control over is taxes. We can't suggest what the market will do in the next 12 months. We do have a crystal ball in our office, but you know what? I hope you guys can figure it out. We haven't figured it out yet. And so what I look at these retirement strategies, you know, the client has already done all the heavy lifting. They've put in a 30-year plus career somewhere. They've saved diligently all their life. They've invested, hopefully worked with a CFP, and they've got a large sum of money. They're sitting there with over $1 million invested somewhere. And how do we get this out? And so withdrawing the right retirement income at the right time from the right pot of money can save you literally thousands of dollars of income tax every year. And I would even suggest hundreds of thousands of dollars of income tax, not just thousands. So hopefully that got your attention, because it makes such a difference. So right off the get-go, there's many sources of retirement income. There's your old age security, pretty straightforward. There's your Canada pension plan, your tax-free savings accounts. There's your RSPs and RIFs. There's a pension or annuities that you may have worked through a company that's paying those. And there's your corporate accounts if you have a personal corporation. And there's life insurance. So there's a whole lot of pots that can pay you an income. The thing is, there's so many different situations, and this is what we love. We absolutely love it's like putting a puzzle together every time we see a new client. Every single situation is so different. You know, you can go on so many different things. What they did for a living. Do they have a pension? Don't they have a pension? Do they have kids? Don't they? Do they have a younger spouse? You know, how long did your parents live? What's your lifestyle? How's your health? So many factors that go into a financial plan. That's just the top ones just off the top of my head. I can go on and on. So right out of the get-go, and we talked about this earlier in the show, if your income is over $247,000 in 2024, so this year, that is now the 53.53% tax bracket. And again, if you were talking to anybody in the U.S., they would say, are you kidding me? Even California, which is the most highest tax state, I think you have to make over $500,000 to be in the highest tax bracket, and it's still not this high. So it's quite a bit lower. So yes, we are extremely highly taxed as Canadians, and this is why we have to do tax planning more so than ever. Again, because just as you were talking about opportunity costs, it makes a massive difference. And so some people say, well, that's no biggie. Who's ever going to make $247,000? Well, certainly highly paid people do. Okay. But what about every person, the ordinary middle-class person that our government suggests that they're trying to protect? Okay. What about them? Are they ever going to make $247,000? And I would say, yes, they will. And the reason is, think about it. Upon death, and you cashed in all your RSPs in 1 year, you had a cottage or some equity investments, and you had to pay capital gains. And add up all the capital gains, divide that by two. And let's say you did have a corporation. All that has to be closed out at death and has to pay a massive dividend. Okay? Add that all up. I would suggest so many people don't realize that they will be in a 53.53% tax bracket at death. So this is why it is extremely important. And it is a bit of a slap in the face. And unfortunately, the people that caused the problem aren't around to say, boy, I wish I didn't pay all that tax. It's the beneficiaries that are getting the money. And then they're realizing the biggest beneficiary wasn't them. It was the government. The government's getting more money than all the people on their beneficiary form. So this is so important to plan this. I can't say this strong enough. So, we have, if you only have, first of all, if you have no money, okay, or very little money, and you've worked for some type of government job, and you have a pension, and your spouse has a pension, and you got old age security, and you got Canada pension on top of that, this planning doesn't really affect you. Okay, you're going to have a pretty good income if you're a teacher, police officer, firefighter, what have you, and you have a nursing pension, etc., and you got those type of incomes, you're going to make pretty darn good income, $50,000 plus each, and you're going to be in the lower tax bracket, 30% bracket. Your house, if you own a house, will be tax-free at death, and if you have any money, keep it in the tax-free savings accounts, and there's no tax there. Planning is so simple for you, okay? But let's say you aren't those people. Then you got to think, okay, what should we do? We've accumulated money. We've been putting money in RSPs all our life. We have all these different pots. Well, old age security, first of all, most people think it starts at 65. And it does. That's the earliest you could take it. But it could be delayed till 70. Now, the reason it might make sense is clawback, old age security clawback starts this year, $91,000. So anytime you make over $91,000, you lose 15 cents on the dollar. So if you made $101,000, you would lose in old age security $1,500 that year. And if you keep doing that, that's $1,500 every year. So right now, 500,000 seniors, or about 8.3%, are affected by clawback. So that's a big enough reason right there. So almost, say 1 in 11, 1 in 12 are affected by clawback. Most people don't feel too sorry for them, okay, because they're making over $91,000. But it could be eliminated if you do the proper planning. Now, if you make over $142,000, you lose it all. So there goes your $713 a month, about $8,656 per year each if you lose your old age security. So if you wait till 70, you'll get quite a bit more. You get a 36% increase, which is $11,636 a year. And it would be all clawed back at $162,000. By the way, you also get a 10% increase at 75. So OAS seems very simple right out of the gate, but there's a lot more moving parts than you think. Canada Pension Plan is even more complicated. You can do a whole show, and we've done a number of shows on Canada Pension Plan, so I won't get into it too much, but you can start at 60 or you can wait till 670. There's health to be considered, opportunity, perhaps on some tax planning, maybe delaying it. There's longevity risk, which is fantastic using Canada Pension Plan. It's basically your index pension, and you do get a 42% increase by waiting till 70. So at 65, you would qualify for about $16,375 a year, okay? $1,364 a month. At 60, which a lot of people, a vast majority actually, take it at 60, is $10,480 a year, which is a 36% decrease. If you wait till 70, though, it's a $23,000 per year payout if you have contributed your max to the CPP. Look at the difference between starting at 60 or 70. $10,500 versus $23,000 a year. Huge amount of income. So you got to really go with, talk to your financial planner and figure out what does it make sense. Now, the opportunity, though, is what if this is going to put you over the clawback threshold? And so maybe there, and you have a whole lot of money sitting in RSPs and you really don't want to leave them to the government because you're going to leave more than half to the government if you just let them sit there, which is a terrible plan. So by delaying OAS and CPP, there may be some opportunities to cash in the RSPs earlier and maybe really minimize what the estate tax will be. And I know nobody will like to pay tax. When they're listening, says, Don, I don't really like this idea of you paying 30% tax. You know, I put this money in RSPs. I don't want to pay tax on them now. Hey, you're going to pay tax sometime. Do you like to pay 30% or do you want to pay 53.53%? That is really the question you have to ask yourself. And, you know, we pretty much know that answer. Okay. So the idea is let's pay the least amount. And sometimes it even makes sense to pull out enough money out of your RSPs and, you know, bring your income up to $150,000, pay 43% tax on it rather than waiting until you pay 53% later. Again, that's kind of on the extreme side of it. I know we've worked on this planning before, and these would be for people that have accumulated a lot of money in RSPs. Now, there's other options with RSPs. What happens if your spouse retires earlier? Okay, great opportunity maybe to pull out money out of their spousal RSPs. If you start a minimum payout out of a spousal RSP, the spouse pays a tax on it. It's not attributed back to you. That three-year rule does not apply. There's that $2,000 pension credit at 65. A lot of people miss that. So it's ideal to kind of get that started. And basically, even just in the past few weeks, a couple of people said, why didn't I make an RSP contribution, Don? I made like $80,000. This is, well, it's because you're now 62 years old. And I didn't want you to save tax at 30% because I can't figure a way that you're not going to be in a higher bracket later. So to make sure you have a planner that is actually going to look at your RSP contribution and say, yeah, it doesn't make sense to do it anymore. It might have made sense when you're 30 years old in deferring the tax for the next 40 years. But now that you're 60 years old, that tax deferral isn't as big. And so you have to look at what's the best route. Does it make sense to do RSPs? It might. If you're in the highest tax bracket, regardless, yes, definitely do it. But if you're not, yeah, you really got to look at the big picture and see, does it make sense? So finally, then there's also your non-registered investments as another pot of money to take money out. Now, the capital gains is taxed at 50%. It's only 50% tax. I take that back, actually. 50% of the capital gain is taxed. The other half is tax-free. Dividends are grossed up. Now, this is complicated, and it's one of those things. I actually just went with a client and they both thought they had it perfectly dialed in. They got their income last year to $87,000. They thought it was perfect. No clawback. The one thing they forgot about was the gross up. And so on the dividend income, it's grossed up by 38% on eligible dividends, which be things like a normal common shares. And if you have a holding company, generally speaking, if you qualify for the small business deduction, there's a 15% gross up on that. So they were over their old age security by simply the gross up. And so, yeah, they got nicked a bit, not the end of the world. Great planning still, but that gross up is often forgotten about. And so there's other opportunities with non-registered. You can go in T-series, which basically is a tax-free income. You're pulling out all the capital, your own money out first. And this will also keep you from OAS clawback. So many different ways to work out a situation, literally saving you thousands and thousands of dollars. And I can go on, and we will, I'll touch on a few after the break.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're going to take a quick break here. We're coming back.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. We're talking about retirement withdrawal strategies.
Yes, and I just wanted to carry on that. And non-registered investments is a great place generally to pull an income from, because you don't want to pay much. There's not a lot of tax, because depending on the way it's invested, and I'll be getting into that, you can save a lot of income tax on there. A lot of people, though, think dividends are the answer, and they might be. I'm not suggesting they aren't. It all depends on your situation. And we talked about that gross up. So if you had, for example, $20,000 in dividend income every year, okay, you think this is great. I'm getting this check every quarter, $5,000 a quarter. Life's good. But what's going to show up on your income is $27,600 because of this 38% gross up. Now, what happens with net income? The net income is what your old age security is based on. And they have something called the dividend tax credit. So it will reduce your taxes significantly, but that's after the net income. So you don't even actually get this extra $7,600. It's just a fictitious number, again, gross up, as it's called. And you pay tax on it, but then you get this dividend tax credit later. Well, this is kind of a dirty pool from the government zone, because the old age security is based on the net income on this fictitious money. So if this extra $7,600 puts you over the threshold, money you did not even receive, you would lose $1,140 in old age security that year. So you really need to have proper tax planning. And this is where I find there's a big divide between simply an investment advisor and a financial planner with their CFP. I can't say this strongly enough, because there's so many dollars that are wasted in just bad planning. And this is where it's so nice to sit down and put this puzzle together. Now, I did touch on T-series just before the break. And T-series, let's say you had an easy number, let's say $100,000. And you said, okay, this is earning $5,000 a year in capital gains. Well, that's only 5%. Very actually lowballing it here. So let's say we take out $5,000 a year out of this T-series fund. Well, $5,000 would be return of capital. That's your own money it pays out. So all the capital gains is reinvested tax-free. And until all the capital is taken away, you won't pay tax on it. So you're getting $5,000 tax-free every year because you've invested your non-registered in these T-series funds. What a great tool, because this will then allow you to pull money out of your RSPs and try to get you to that clawback threshold. So great idea. And whether it's an RSP or if you have a personal corporation, same idea, it allows you to take more money out of those. So end of the day, the T-series might be the answer. I find the worst planning, and I hate to say it, this comes across more often than not, people first pot of money they want to pull money from is their tax-free savings account. Let's take it out of there. It's tax-free. And I go, okay, that's the last place. All you just did is deferred more tax later that will likely be taxed at 53.53%. So yes, it feels good that year, but boy, is it not going to feel good later. So you really need to look at the bigger picture, the long term, and not get that immediate gratification on this year's tax return. You have to think a little longer term. So corporate income is also good. And it's almost like a bit like an RSP. You do have to pay a bit of tax. You saved a lot of tax by having money in your corporation. So you only paid, say, 15% tax on it. But then later on, you do have to pay tax later. So it's not at the same rate as, say, interest income. Perfect example, if you made, say, between $55,000 and $90,000, you're in a 29.65% tax bracket. So on interest income, you would pay that. Eligible dividend income, you pay only 7.56%. Great deal. Other dividend income, which comes from a private corporation, would be 20%. So it's still almost 10% savings later, which is, you know, still worthwhile, but it's not as good as, say, eligible dividend income. Borrowing from a life insurance policy, again, is tax-free. Generally speaking, I like to save that for later on in life. So, you know, you've used other options first, and you can use your life insurance, your cash surrender value to the bank, and they will use this collateral, and they'll just, you can borrow money against it, and that debt is paid off upon death. So it's, again, a great way to get a tax-free income. And so one thing a lot of people don't realize, as much as it's tax time now, it's, and this happened again this week, this is no problem. I made lots of donations, lots of medical expenses this year, so I won't have to worry about that OAS clawback. Those are tax credits. They are not deductions. And therefore, it doesn't affect your net income. It does save you tax, but you'll still get OAS clawback. So if you made $100,000, you're $10,000 over the clawback limit, for example. And unfortunately, that's going to come back to bite you. You're going to get a deduction because of the donations, but it doesn't affect your net income. So I, you know, basically there's so many opportunities here. There's year by year. I find investment allocation is probably one of the big things that Mitch and I also go over. And this is where I find what happens is when you're younger, you're all growth mode. You put all the things into growth-oriented funds. And so that's how your RSPs are in equities. Then when you get older, you end up with extra money. So you know what? I want this safer. And it ends up in non-registered. Well, we really need to do a tax swap. So if what you're doing in that case, you got your most highly taxed investments, you're paying tax on every year on your non-registered, and you got your least tax investments in your RSP because they've been invested for 30 years. So we need to make changes there. Literally, it could save you if you had a significant amount of money each year in the at least a $6,000 a year on $1 million on a 50-50 portfolio. That means half of it in equities, half of it in interest bearing. It would save you over $6,000 a year just by swapping where that money is. So many opportunities. Again, this is where you seek a financial planner and get a strategy put in place for you.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. You can find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. A quick break here, and we're back with our last segment.
You are listening to a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
We are planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox are here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. Call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, we're finishing off with retirement myths.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. So the first one that I wanted to go through here is that a lot of people, when they retire, they think that the cost of living is actually going to be lower in retirement. And this is a very common myth among Canadians, is that their income needs will be much lower once they stop working. After all, won't they have to stop commuting or possibly stop making mortgage payments? Is this realistic? Not necessarily. Many financial advisors suggest you plan to have as much as 80% of your working income in retirement or more if you plan to have an active retirement involving travel or any other hobbies that you're going to pick up during retirement. There are also other factors that are going to play in during retirement that are more expensive than you might have expected. For starters, plenty of Canadians have debt in retirement. 14% still have a mortgage, and 42% have some other kind of debt. So managing debt in retirement is still going to have an impact on your disposable income. Many retired or soon to be retired Canadians are still supporting adult children financially, for example, with their education costs or to help them make a down payment on a new home. We all see how expensive homes are here, and bank of mom and dad certainly are potentially there. So that might be a retirement expense for some. And then there's also the divorced retirees that they could find relying that on a single income after they split up the family home they may have left. They might have less for their retirement income to draw from. And then instead of splitting those expenses, they're now paying for those expenses on their own. Another factor here is that higher life expectancy also brings challenges. So the longer we live, the more likely we're going to have lots of health issues depending on your province. So you could have substantial outlays for prescription drugs, dental treatment, physiotherapy, medical equipment. A lot of factors here that come into this. And that's kind of why we're busting this myth that retirement isn't necessarily going to be cheaper just because you stop working. And those kind of fixed costs that are bothering you, like the driving back and forth from Toronto, are stopping.
It's interesting. I came across an article just last week, Mitch, and they actually had a inflation calculator for yourself. And it was literally just exactly what you're saying, is that older people often have generally a higher inflation rate than the average person. And so you put in your expenses and it actually works out your inflation rate.
Well, how much more time do you have when you retire and you're just like, well, I got all this money, maybe I should probably go and do something, versus say, hey, I'm at the office working, thinking about spending money, I'm working, right? So totally different mindset. And I mean, you see all different kind of retirees, and lots are very conservative and afraid to start opening those retirement accounts versus ones that are like, wow, I retired. All right, let's go. I'm ready to spend it. And there's the second myth here that RSPs are a complete retirement plan. You kind of went through this, Don. You listed all of these different accounts, and people think that the RSP, like if they have that RSP, they're all set. But while it is a great account, it's a very tax efficient way, you also have to manage how you withdraw. I know you just went through that, but it is a puzzle in retirement. You've got the CPP, you have OAS, you have company pensions, tax-free savings accounts, dividends, rental income, possibly. So there are all these different buckets, if you per se, that you're going to take from and you're going to draw from to create that most tax advantageous retirement income. And so the myth is definitely not true that you only need RSP. You need other sources of income there to really get your retirement going. And the third one here is $1 million is enough for retirement. $1 million is likely not enough for retirement for most these days. I know it used to be on a commercial. I think it was actually our commercial. It was IG, what's your retirement number? And this was a long, long time ago. And it was a great commercial, and they would like draw up everyone's number above their head, and it was like, oh, that's what's your number. And you probably remember this more than I do.
Yeah, no, that was a good one. Yes, unless you have a time machine and you can go back, you know, kind of like the Bare Naked Ladies song, if I had $1 million, what would I do? Yes, it was $1 million meant a lot more then. Particularly in the 80s and so forth, when $1 million and interest rates were 8 to 10%, and the price is so much lower. But fast forward 40 years or so, and $1 million is a good start, okay? But it isn't everything.
God, you just lived in the golden era, didn't you? You had right in the 80s there, you had $1 million was good enough. You had 8% interest
yeah,
rate.
That would be
here
great.
We go.
You're just
here
living the dream, weren't you?
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of people with $1 million back then, Mitch. So yeah.
Okay. Well, you still got that 8%. Good for you. Anyway, so the $1 million, really, there is no set number. There's no magic number. Everyone's different. Everyone has different expenses, different goals. And so to really have that flat line that $1 million is enough for retirement is certainly not true, because especially when you retire, everyone has got those different stuff going on, and maybe that you want to change things going on. And then cars are really expensive these days. You got to factor those in to your financial plans too. So don't have that set goal, make sure to go through this with your financial planner, that you don't have a set number. Once you hit that number, okay, I'm out the door. Don't have that number. That's definitely not the route you want to go.
And if you do have a number, you better see a true financial planner and put this into the financial plan. It's kind of interesting. I'm seeing a client of mine next week, and his numbers changed because he's retired now, but he realized he's spending more than he suggested he would, because he's got all this time now. Nobody really knows their expenses until they actually are in retirement. So it's going to be a great review, but this is why it's so important to get a real true look and having a very well done financial plan. And I can't say that strongly enough.
Does it matter that my number's like 3 digits? Hey, so we need a new band to cover the Bare Naked Ladies. If I had $1 million, and it would be if I had $10 million, then it would make sense.
Then it really makes sense. I don't know if we need 5-10 million, but 5 is really good.
You go. All right, a band's out there, start recording. All right, we have been planning your financial future. I'm Scott Thompson. Don Fox and Mitch Fox have been here from Fox Group Private Wealth Management. Find out more at donfox.net. You can call them at IG Private Wealth Management at 905-972-7420. All right, another fabulous show. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great week.
The preceding was a paid commercial program. Unless otherwise identified, the guests on the program are employees of or otherwise represent the advertiser. The opinions expressed therein are those of the advertiser and do not necessarily reflect the views and policies of 900 CHML.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.